The News Dissector with Danny Schechter, Fridays at 1 p.m. on the Progressive Radio Network.
Hey, I'm on. I'm being told I'm on, and yes, I am on. This is Danny Schechter, your News Dissector. You're listening to News Dissector Radio, heard every week at this time on the ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com. So we are going to be on the Internet. I believe that we're also streaming this program, and we have a lot to talk about today. Just some late-breaking news and developments that I can bring to you. First of all, apparently Israel is attacking Gaza again in the aftermath of a recent rocket that attacked a bus and hurt an Israeli child. Israel is now bombing Gaza, and apparently bombing Gaza right now. I'm sorry, I just got a text here. I can't do everything at once, texting, reading, and everything else. At any rate, that's a late development. As far as the shutdown, I don't have the latest news on it, but the last I looked, there were discussions still underway, a $5 billion gap between the Republicans and the Democrats, a lot of ideological obstinacy on the part of the Republicans, particularly on the issue of funding for women's health. That seems to be one of the issues that the Republicans are refusing to allow, and they're ready to shut the government down on this whole question. This is the weekend of the National Conference on Media Reform up in Boston. I'll be streaming some of the panels on my blog this weekend at newsdissector.com/blog. I'm not there this year, partly because I've been frustrated in the past with the lack of follow-up at these conferences, bringing a lot of people together, getting everybody excited about the media, but very little effort underway to build a media and democracy movement. Rather, instead, they seem to be funding lobbying efforts in Washington, trying to lobby the FCC. It's sort of an elite, top-down approach. I take a bottom-up, grassroots approach. And we seem to have a difference there, although I haven't had the opportunity to debate it. But I wasn't invited this year, but I'm not against the conference by any means or the people who are going there. So you should check out what's happening there. We'll get into that in more detail. We will be talking about media on this program, as we do every week. And we have two guests, one the author of a new book, really updating Tom Paine's Common Sense, which was the classic of the American Revolution, the basically manifesto call for democracy. And we have with us Brian Kahn later in the program, who will be talking about how to use our founding values to reclaim our nation and stop the radical right from hijacking America. That's Brian Kahn. He'll be on with us from Atlanta a little bit later. From Atlanta today, Sherry Welch, our dissectress, is here. Do you hear me, Sherry?
Loud and clear, Danny Schechter.
Okay. So Sherry is here, and she'll be chiming in the discussion. But our first guest, coming up in a minute, is an anchor woman for Russia Today, which is a channel that is on the air all over the world, including here the Manhattan Cable in New York. It's was really started as sort of Russia's answer to CNN, and it's a very unique broadcasting service. Lauren Lister has agreed to join us. She's anchoring for RT, as it's known, out of Washington, and we'll meet her in a minute. So you're listening to News Dissector Radio on PRN. The number to call, 888-874-4888.
Wish you were as soft and smooth.
The world in a
40% of the stations carry no news of the world.
Freedom of the press is only guaranteed when you own the press.
Communication breakdown. Pause for the message. Wake up. Every station is identification. Global syndication is the shaping of the nation. ABC, Disney, NBC, GE, Murdoch gets Foxy, and with a hint, he owns a pen. The camera, the sword, by a Coke, by a Ford, getting broke, getting bored.
And experience your psychic connection.
We don't have shit to say, we don't have anything to do.
What we want, what we need, what we want, what we need. So do we even know whose plans to see? You think the media works for you, but it's a job for them, they're just selling fruit. Flip, slam, diagram, data jam, handicap, caught it. Yo, you bought it. My mind is a profitable thing to waste. You want another taste, baby?
Freedom
is a rumor.
Until freedom is a rumor. And that's called News Goo. That's a song written, inspired really by my book, The More You Watch, The Less You Know. It was done by Polarity One. It's a sort of a rap song about the media and about media consolidation. So now let's shift gears just a little bit, but because we want to say in the world today, it's not just American media anymore. It's not just, our choices are not limited to what the networks in America are putting out. We have channels like Al Jazeera, for example, which is one of the best known brands in the world. There's a report I've done on the economy that's up on the Al Jazeera website at aljazeera.net, Al Jazeera English. So Al Jazeera is there, but also a channel, RT. RT is, it stands for Russia Today. It's a broadcast outlet out of Moscow, but has offices all over the United States. And in New York City, there's a great bureau of RT to which I've contributed, I must admit, and proudly admit. And among the people there Marina Portaya and Anasia Cherkina are among the correspondents. Mona is there as the kind of coordinating producer. And I've been there as an occasional commentator. But one of the reporters who's been there for a bit, Lauren Lister, who's now in Washington. Lauren, welcome to the program. Sorry for this long, convoluted introduction. Partly, I've just been...
No, it's great. It was a great introduction, Danny.
Well,
thanks for having me on your show.
Yeah. Well, just because I'm just getting texts that there's something wrong with my computer, so I'm freaking out.
You're multitasking.
Yeah, freaking out, trying to do all of this at once and keep tabs of the news and keep tabs of myself and now of you. So, Lauren, tell us a little bit about you. You're an anchor woman there now, but you've been reporting for RT. What's a little bit of your background? How did you get into journalism, and how do you see RT as an outlet?
You know, I got into journalism with great noble notions back in college, and it is what I studied and have been in broadcast for quite a while. And I came to RT as kind of this new fledgling station that I hadn't heard much about that was launching in Washington and was doing international coverage and things that weren't being covered by the mainstream media. And I was a bit green then, but what I've really discovered over the past year and a half there, working out of our Washington newsroom, and then, as you mentioned, in our New York bureau, and covering news events overseas, internationally for our Moscow bureau and main newsroom, is really that there's such another side of the issue that is so rarely covered by the mainstream media, and it usually feels much, much closer to the real story that's not being told. And when you're on the ground covering these things, you really see the amount to which you can do a better justice to these stories by telling them from a point of view that's overlooked, whether it's from the point of view of people that are ignored in stories, whether it's marginalized people, disenfranchised people, or the people you don't normally hear from. They usually sing a different story than in the official point of view that you hear from government officials or people that really, release the press releases when it comes to an event or a news issue.
I mean, what I'm impressed by is, the channel is not only young in American terms or world terms, but the people who work there are young and feisty and willing to take risks and offer points of view that we just don't see on American television. And, I've seen some references on conspiracy websites that this is all because Putin is controlling everything at the channel, which I don't think is the case. But it does seem that there's a spirit there to get at the truth, whatever that is, and to try to offer a background and context and analysis, which you rarely see on American TV.
Absolutely. I mean, even watching just domestic news, you see such an isolated point of view of things really seen just through the lens of America, and with no perspective on a global perspective or how things are perceived internationally or just a broader perspective. And I think that we really try to aim to look at that perspective, to look at things through a different lens, and to not be afraid to question everything. And I think that's something that you don't often see on the mainstream media. I think it's something that we really are, really trying and striving to do that, to bring up different points of view, to bring up different voices that aren't heard, and to challenge them, and to really challenge the conventional wisdom, whether it's in regards to the economy or the political system or foreign policy. I mean, we try to take no prisoners, to really get to the bottom of what's not being told and what's not being presented on mainstream news, especially mainstream corporate news.
Well, I think if you contrast it and compare it, let's say, to CNN, which it was, it was originally presented, at least in the media terms, as here, as Russia's attempt at CNN, and you see a real contrast. Now, you watch the other news networks, too. How would you describe the RT difference, so the way it differentiates its coverage from others? How do you view sort of what you're doing when you go out and do a story?
Well, I'll give you an example. I mean, right now I'm in the car headed up to New Hampshire to the Bretton Woods Conference, which is something that has really gotten very little coverage in the mainstream media, except a few conservative blogs have accused George Soros, who's the investor in this think tank that's putting it on, of trying to remake the global economy and remake the global financial system, taking America down a few notches. I mean, this is a huge conference with lofty goals, saying that essentially the 1944 historic Bretton Woods Conference that created the IMF, created the World Bank, created the U.S. dollar as the reserve currency, and has been the system in place since then, is no longer serving the world in a globalized economy, and where trade and everything is so global, but yet there haven't been the policies and the thinking to adjust to that. So tons of economic thinkers, George Soros, Nobel Prize winning economist Joseph Stiglitz, former Federal Reserve Chairman Paul Volcker, they're all getting together to discuss this, and really nobody's talking about it or covering it or reporting on it. We want to get to the bottom of what's really going on and what is the pulse and what these people are thinking about, and what, are they trying to remake the financial system, and what's going to come of this, if anything? And that's something that I think you haven't really heard anything about, and that's just one example. Whether we're covering something that not a lot of other people are covering, or whether we're finding an angle that is untouched, I think that's really what differentiates us from the mainstream news channel.
You see, this tends to get dismissed a lot, by the so-called cognoscenti, mainstream, lamestream, whatever you want to call it, media, when they do refer to RT, they, refer to you as kind of conspiratorial, because you often have people who are critics who are not really seen or heard on American television. I mean, one of the people on RT now with his own show is hardly conspiratorial, Tom Hartman, who's a radio host and a writer, progressive American media analyst, and RT has him on the air. So, I mean, it seems as if the idea to try to kind of get at not just what today's news is, but what it could be, what are all our alternatives, how do we fix these problems, what are possible...
Exactly.
That seems
exactly
to be missing.
Danny, I think that so often the mainstream media focuses on a very, very short-term perspective. They're just constantly driven by the 24-hour news cycle to report the latest news, but you never get the big picture. If you hear about Afghanistan, you hear 7 civilians died in Afghanistan, but you don't hear the broader perspective of record civilian casualties in Afghanistan last year, in an escalating war, and the toll that it's taking on the economy, and the hundreds of billions of dollars being spent at a time when the economy is suffering in the United States, and the U.S. yet still makes up 50% of the global economy spending on military spending. I mean, these are kind of the bigger picture things that you never hear about in the mainstream media, which is so caught up in the here and now and the latest breaking news. And I think that's something that we really try to delve into and to go deeper and to tell that bigger picture, to give the context, to get the background, to get the historical significance. And I think, you're right. In the coverage that RT gets, people are so focused on, some of the more controversial guests that we've had on, some of the more controversial points of view. But isn't this what freedom of speech is all about? It's hearing more viewpoints, hearing viewpoints that diverge from the orthodoxy. Isn't that how people get a better perspective on a wider array of stories and of reality?
Well,
that broader perspective?
You would think so. That's certainly been my sermon for all of these years, talking about diversity in the media. And of course, in this whole issue of the economy, we just had Jesse Ventura on the Progressive Radio Network, and he was basically, blasting the Federal Reserve Bank. Now, he's sort of a libertarian. That's a target of the libertarians, but at least, he's raising an institution that's important. In Washington, the Trilateral Commission is meeting this weekend, and the organization We Are Change are doing what they call an intervention there. So there are people who are targeting these para-economic organizations, but most of us don't really follow these issues in detail, and this is really what I've been trying to do with my movie Plunder, my book The Crime of Our Time, and all that, to try to talk about this with some kind of perspective, and that's what I think is often missing. Now, when you go off and try to talk to other media people, do they talk to you, and do you ever raise these questions?
With other media people?
Yeah.
Of course, of course. I mean, it brings a very feisty debate because, there are aspects of what we do that I think that people that are very uptight in terms of convention and haven't really looked at another side of an issue can be a little bit close-minded about. But I think that when you really dig in, you see that there are sides of stories that are being overlooked that are so valid and so important and sometimes, really the most important part of a story. And I think that's something that we do a really good job of, or trying to.
Well, I think, Sherry, did you have a comment? I heard a mumble and a grumble.
I think the show's amazing, and I like the fact that you're going to go up to Bretton Woods, because that is something that needs to be discussed, and that you don't cover shows like, topics like Charlie Sheen. That is so irrelevant to people's lives.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, how much of the newscast that we watch are focused on stories like Lindsay Lohan and Charlie Sheen? What things are happening in the world? And
or
Danny, that's such a good point that you make. Sorry?
I'm sorry, or the Donald.
The Donald. Right. The Donald Trump, right. Okay.
And Danny, you make such a good point about kind of the things that Americans, or the things that aren't presented on the news that are nonetheless important. I mean, for example, in thinking about the IMF, the average American probably doesn't know what the IMF does or how relevant it is, but, just talking about my experience, when I covered the elections in Brazil, the average homeless Brazilian on the street knows what the IMF is because they know that they came in and privatized things in their economy, and that's why they suddenly couldn't afford anything. So it's policies that the United States backs and is behind affect people all over the world, and Americans are completely ignorant of it because it doesn't affect their daily lives, but it affects the daily lives of so many other people. And that's just one example of kind of a different perspective that you don't see watching the mainstream media.
You're listening to Lauren Lister talking with us today on News Dissector Radio. She's an anchor woman and correspondent for RT, Russia Today. One of the knocks on Russia Today is, well, of course, you're from Russia, you're anti-American, you're pro-Russian, you won't. I was at the studios of RT in New York when the Russian spy scandal broke, and I was interested, mm-hmm. How are they going to handle it? They were all over it. They had more information on that than almost any other network, and you covered it,
yeah.
Without a point of view, like the Russians are being unfairly treated. You had all sorts of points of view.
Right. Yeah, no, that's very true. And I think that as far as, that is one of the criticisms we get is of being anti-American. And I don't think that that's the case. I think that since when is looking at any issue with questioning it and with a point of view that allows for criticism being anti-American? I mean, I think that we have really valid points of view that are always backed up and we examine things. And I think that to call it anti-American is just kind of a way to dismiss it and to, kind of discourage people from taking in that aspects that are valid. And I think that does a real disservice. I think it just is trying to discredit us in a way and not allow for people to really see the good work that's being done.
So are you saying
it gets overshadowed by claims like that?
Are you saying that Vladimir Putin does not call you up on your cell phone and tell you what to say?
Putin does not call me up on my cell phone. He doesn't sign my paycheck. He doesn't assign me my stories, nor does he tell my boss what stories to assign me. It's not that way at all. We have our own editorial integrity. We have our own editorial mission, and it is completely separate from the Kremlin.
It seems like it's, 20-somethings working there. I don't know. Am I wrong? Am I just too old and out of it? But it seems like a lot of the reporters are young and very scrappy, not to mention very attractive, but also articulate. I mean, very, mm-hmm. with a lot of drive.
Yeah.
I'm saying that approvingly.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you say, Danny, that some of the criticism you've heard is of the young talent and that sort of thing. And I mean, we're all journalists that have been educated at some of the best schools and had some of the best training, and we all know our craft and are working at our craft and really want to do good work. And I think that dismissing us as young or inexperienced is kind of just trying to take away from what we are trying to do or looking at the work that we're doing. And you're right, we are scrappy, and I think that we do have a fresh perspective that is lacking maybe among people who have been doing this a much longer time and been confined to what's allowed or what's expected within a mainstream media organization of orthodoxy. And, you know, I really want to go back to something you said, because you mentioned that Jesse Ventura you had on. And there is this perception, I think, that the mainstream media is, I don't know, covers all the news that's relevant or does, you know, puts all the points of view that are respected or expected on the news. But that's not the case. I mean, controversial point of views have been taken off the airwaves of mainstream media, and Jesse Ventura is a great example of that. I mean, he signed a deal for a show on MSNBC that never made it onto the air, and he claims and says that it's because they didn't like his point of view on the Iraq War. So there is a history in the mainstream media organizations of not allowing controversial points of view on air. And I think that does a disservice to the American public.
Well, as somebody who worked at CNN, ABC News, and CNBC, and it was written 11 books on the media, including The More You Watch, The Less You Know, about my own experience in the newsroom. There were many examples of stories where efforts to introduce other perspectives were basically not permitted or edited out at the last minute or what have you. I mean, I wouldn't deny that. I think there's a great deal of cover-up going on even to this day. I mean, still. I mean, finally, after 3 weeks, you know, of rah-rah, the rebels of Libya, then suddenly articles appear that say the rebels of Libya can't fight their way out of a paper bag, they shouldn't even be armed, they're a disgrace, et cetera, et cetera. And now today, this is the other story that I was reading this morning, the General Ham of the Africa Command is basically intimating that they're going to introduce American troops and Western troops into Libya. So there's quite an escalation likely there, because this seems to be another war that we are losing. And this is, you know, American networks are not really too fierce in criticizing and covering what's going on and asking these kinds of questions. So these stories...
No, quite the contrary. You see a kind of latent and expected patriotism or championing of the home team without enough questioning of exactly what you're talking about, Danny. You know, where is this going? What are the motives? Is this the way the United States should be directing its both prowess as well as money in bombing Libya and in progressing goals that nobody's quite sure what they are, where this will lead? And I think, you know, looking at the historical perspective in the past of what United States intervention has been in countries like this with, you know, look at back in during the Soviet occupation in Afghanistan when the United States backed the Mujahideen, and now some of those fighters are today's Taliban that the United States is fighting. And, you know, the history of those things, a guest that I was interviewing on a show yesterday about this that are, you know, experts, policy experts, say that who are these rebels and what makes anybody think that this could not be the U.S. couldn't be setting up the exact same situation?
You know, this is certainly what Gaddafi is saying, you know, namely that the rebels have a lot of al-Qaeda elements within it. And certainly Benghazi has been a hotbed of al-Qaeda recruiting. So, you know, it's not impossible. You know, and that's how bizarre and absurd all of this is. You know, when you get into the layers of news and you get away from the simplistic way of framing it, you get into more depth and detail.
Exactly. When you get away from the official point of view that Gaddafi is evil, therefore the United States should get involved, that's such a...
Who's laughing? Is that you, Sherry?
It's just ironic what she's saying.
There you go.
You know, if we don't like them, then we take them out. You know, if Libya was raising broccoli, would we even care?
Lauren, are you there?
It's oil. I think she lost her cell phone.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Can we try calling Lauren again, please, so we can say goodbye to her? I mean, you could see how articulate she is and how passionate she is about her work. And I think this is something very important. There's an app for RT that at least I have on my iPhone here, so you can actually watch the stories. They also have a website. They're on YouTube as well as on Time Warner Cable right here in Manhattan and many other cable outlets. They actually have more distribution than Al Jazeera.
The Libyan rebels, by the way, have seized Russian journalists. That's the latest update on their RT website.
Well, there you go. So they're not that friendly, you know, towards Russians or you know, there are many Americans. I don't know if you saw Geraldo Rivera earlier. The Daily Show had this clip of him involved in a big, you know, kind of looked like a staged battle taking place in Benghazi. And he was screaming, Geraldo of Arabia, screaming at the rebels, please don't shoot me, you know. And of course, earlier Jesse Ventura was talking about Tora Bora. You know, Geraldo had gone there with a pistol, aspiring to kill Gaddafi himself, so much for being a neutral newsman, you know. So these are issues that are really important. In terms of your colleagues at RT, Do you guys feel besieged? Do you feel like you're under attack, or do you feel like you're beginning to build an audience and you know, respect for your work?
You know, I do feel more and more. I mean, especially in Libya, I can't tell you the number of people who have said, even, you know, people that are critical of RT because of whatever place that they're coming from, you know, politically or as far as their perception of what our station is, that have said they have only tuned into us for coverage of Libya. I've heard that from a number of people, even people that held, there was a group of people, Pamela Geller was among this panel from, she's one of the women that took the charge against the Ground Zero Mosque and has the group that is the Stop Islamization of America group, headed up this, you know, very concerned panel on RT and Al Jazeera. But, I mean, their point was, why are these stations doing such a good job of doing what others are not? You know, that was the problem. So, you know, and I do think that a growing number of our guests were hearing a lot more respect for the work that we're doing, and I do think we're getting some really positive feedback. I mean, I do think that we need to get our name out there and get, you know, our brand out there for more people to broaden the audience, because some of the criticism has been so focused on just such a small, you know, criticisms that are such a small part of what this entire mission and what our entire coverage is.
Tell us again, RT based in Moscow, but you're seen in how many countries?
We're in over 100 countries all over the world, Europe, South Africa, Asia, India. Our main newsroom is in Moscow, but we have bureaus all over. Our reporter, Paul Leslier, has been doing an amazing job of covering all of the Middle East and North African unrest. She is based out of Tel Aviv, I believe, and has been all over. She was firsthand on the ground in Egypt and a number of countries. We have reporters in Moscow, on the ground in Benghazi, in Tripoli, covering all of the developments in Libya. We have a correspondent in India. We have correspondents that travel all over Europe doing stories. And then in North America, we have our Washington, D.C. is our main hub, our main newsroom. And this is where we broadcast RT America. It's also where, as you mentioned, the Tom Hartman Show broadcast and the Alona Show broadcast, which are both news talk shows, commentary shows. And RT America does have its own separate broadcast, separate from the international 24-hour Moscow broadcast. Now, they do dovetail. Often stories will appear on both. But what you see at 4, 5, 7, and 8 on the airwaves in the United States is our RT America programming.
Well, you know, let me just say that the other day I was at the studios and I was watching a full 2 hours of coverage, you know, different stories about the, you know, same issue. I think it was Libya, but just from all sorts of different points of view. It was almost like instant documentary about what was going on in depth. And it was very impressive, you know, in a sense. It was offering what we are not receiving. And, you know, this is why maybe 3.5 million Americans went to international websites during the Iraq war because of dissatisfaction with American coverage. So I want to just...
Absolutely.
I
was just interviewing a man who made a video. He made a short film about a little armless alley during the Iraq War, and it was kind of a cartoon, South Park-esque, that was critical of media coverage of the Iraq War and of Bush policies and that sort of thing. But he essentially said that he stopped watching corporate media after the Iraq War because the coverage was so one-sided and didn't question what was going on. And took voices off the air that questioned what was going on in the motives of the war and what was going on there, and essentially hasn't watched it since. So, you know, think people like that have been turned off to the mainstream media, and I do think have turned to alternative media on the web, to sources like RT, because we really are able to do those stories and put those points of view on that other stations don't, for whatever number of reasons.
Well, I want to congratulate you and your colleagues. I want to express my appreciation for being asked to comment from time to time on RT.
Absolutely. We love having you on, Danny.
On RT Stories. And I want to encourage our audience to check out RT as an alternative, the kind of alternative American activists have yet to create. I mean, Gary Null, to his credit, has created this progressive radio network, but where is the progressive television network? We do have free speech TV. We do have Link TV, but we still don't have the impact of generating original news and content the way RT is able to do. And I want to advise you or urge you and your colleagues to keep doing this. Get on the air, talk about RT, talk it up, and let's get some reaction, and let's try to build the audience, because I think the American media responds best to competition, not to criticism. So if there's a competitive force out there, I think what you'll find is that it might influence American news coverage too, and let's hope so, because we need it badly. Thank you so much. Lauren Lister, on her way to New Hampshire to cover the Bretton Woods conference, and you can see her on RT anchoring from the newsroom in Washington, D.C. Stay with us here on News Dissector Radio. We're going to be meeting with Brian Kahn, the author of Real Common Sense, an updated version, if you will, of Tom Paine's great American classic. So stay with us. Here's the theme song of Plunder.
Your Honor, for many years, I operated a Ponzi scheme through the investment advisory side of my business. I knew what I was doing was wrong, indeed criminal.
The shine on America's shoes got gold.
When Wall Street stepped into the fold,
Congress paid off workers, laid off.
Stanford, AIG, and Madoff.
Credit swaps, credit stops, empty wallets and empty shops,
and bank walking to AAA. Grandpa loses 401k.
You're listening to the Progressive Radio Network, your number one source for progressive commentary.
Do you want to listen to your favorite PRN show in your car or when you're out for a jog? You can download any show on the archives at any time. Visit the archives at progressiveradionetwork.com/archives. We can also be found in the iTunes store under Progressive Radio Network. All our archives are free, so go ahead and check them out. Thanks for listening to the Progressive Radio Network. Stay tuned to stay informed.
For the most incisive analysis on the state of our planet from a black left perspective, join me, Glenn Ford, and my colleague Nellie Bailey at Black Agenda Radio, right here on the Progressive Radio Network. We bring you the full scope of reality as we and our interlocutors see it every Monday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Black Agenda Radio, the place to get oriented to the black left worldview on the Progressive Radio Network.
This is Barry Farber with the best self-improvement advice you've ever had or ever heard. Learn a foreign language. Sounds impossible? Give me a chance to prove it. I'm Barry Farber. I can guide you to mastery of any language in the world quickly, easily, inexpensively, and at home. You will grow culturally, linguistically, intellectually, commercially, professionally, even romantically. Get that smile off. face, it happened to me. The Barry Farber Language Club, every Tuesday at 3 p.m. Tuesdays, 3. Right here.
Don't miss out on Dr. Michio Kaku's weekly show, Explorations. Dr. Kaku is the only scientist with his own nationally syndicated radio show. Explorations is the program that explains complex physics with an accessible approach. So take an exploration with Dr. Michio Kaku, Tuesdays at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, to discuss topics ranging from space exploration to stem cell research.
Progressive Radio Network, information for the independent mind.
It's coming through a hole in the air from those nights in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the wars against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA. It's coming from the sorrow in the street, the holy places where the races meet, from the homicidal bitching that goes down in every kitchen to determine who will serve and who will eat. It's coming to America first, the cradle of the best and of the worst. It's here they got the range and the machinery of change, and it's here they got the spiritual thirst. It's here the family's broken, and it's here the lonely say that the heart has got to open in a fundamental way. Democracy is coming to the USA.
Democracy is coming to the USA. That's our hope. That's our struggle. That's our vision. And joining me now here on News Dissector Radio on ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com is a young man, a not-so-young man. I don't know how young or not young he is, Brian Kahn. But he's the host of an award-winning public radio program called Home Ground. He's been published in the Los Angeles Times, The Nation, and Field and Stream magazine. He's worked as a ranch hand, a college boxing coach, a lawyer, conservationist, journalist. He lives in Montana. And Brian Kahn is the author of a new 7 stories book, Real Common Sense, basically using our founding values to reclaim our nation and stop the radical right from hijacking America. So, Brian Kahn, welcome to News Dissector Radio, here with Sherry Welch in Atlanta, our weekly program that's an outgrowth of my blog on mediachannel.org, the News Dissector blog. How are you today?
Pleasure to be with you. I'm just fine.
And tell me a little bit about, you know, Real Common Sense, because I'm a big Tom Paine fan, obviously.
The title's taken from Tom Paine's famous book written in 1776, 100,000 to 150,000 copies sold in a society of 2 million free Americans. There were about 1 million slaves at the time. Showed the degree of citizenship that people had at the time. Farmers read it in the field. George Washington had it read to his troops, and it mobilized the nation in support of independence. And the Continental Congress meeting that declared independence on July 4th. I picked the title because Glenn Beck wrote a book called Glenn Beck's Common Sense. In the front of the book, he said, inspired by Tom Paine. It's completely bogus.
Talk about distortion. Yeah,
you know, some of the radical right or reactionary right, as I call them, like to use Paine and selective quotes from the founders, and it does give them credibility to people, because people haven't studied the Constitution, the founding documents, and they care about it. And so, if you say we're carrying out the work of the founders, you gain some credibility. So I thought that really needed to be confronted. And so part of the book summarizes what the founders were really about, and boil it in it down to its simplest terms. We say the Pledge of Allegiance a lot growing up and at various events, and it ends with the words, with liberty and justice for all. Both of those were central concepts to the founders, And the right likes to talk about a commercial version of liberty, which means we can do anything we want in business, no matter what the environmental or human consequences, and government has no business interfering. But you will never hear them talk about the justice part. And the founding documents make clear, in terms of the Declaration of Independence and the preamble to the Constitution, that the founders were concerned about the community as well as the individual. And if you don't mind, I want to refresh your listeners' recollection with a couple of quotes.
Please, anytime.
Okay.
Here on my show, by all means.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. Now, that's from the first paragraph of the Declaration of Independence, penned by Tom Jefferson. And this was written to the preamble to the Constitution of the United States. George Washington chaired the Constitutional Convention in Philadelphia 11 years after the Declaration of Independence and after we'd won the War of Independence, 8-year war, by the way. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. Now, every one of those words was chosen carefully, and every one counts. And it's a very ambitious charge to the people's government, which the founders recognized explicitly was to represent the common good, the general welfare.
So now, aside from the omissions there of the rights of women and certainly freedom for slaves, it was a very enlightened document at the time. Who was Tom Paine in this context?
Well, Tom Paine was an interesting guy. He was a British subject, had a lot of problems in Britain. He was a left revolutionary, and George Washington would be on the conservative spectrum. He somehow came across Ben Franklin when he was in Europe, and Franklin suggested he come to the United States. And Paine was a writer, and he wrote this pamphlet called Common Sense. By the way, he later went back to France, was, like Jefferson, an advocate of the French Revolution, was imprisoned after the French Revolution by some segment of the French revolutionaries. He later wrote a book called The Rights of Man, Part Two, in response to criticism of the French Revolution, in which he advocated free public education, public works for the unemployed, pensions for the elderly to be paid by a progressive income tax, none of which Glenn Beck, of course, supports. So the citing of Tom Paine by Glenn Beck was too much for me, let's put it that way.
Well, now, as you come back to these documents after all of these years and being as, somebody who's, living in Montana, who's been a ranch hand, a college boxing coach, a lawyer, a conservationist, and many other things. What was your impetus, your passion, aside from discrediting Beck, who's done a very good job of discrediting himself and is now being pushed off of Fox News, undoubtedly to reappear in some new reincarnation? But what was your feeling? Why do we need this restatement of our values?
Well,
now?
I think, frankly, our country is on the line. The societies are not guaranteed survival. This country has been built on a combination of things. There's dark and light in our history. We have to be frank about that. You pointed out, slavery. The founders, many of them, owned slaves, and yet they wrote the document, all men are created equal. Many didn't believe women were equal. But over time, what has made America outstanding in key respects has been the effort by regular citizens, to achieve the goal of liberty and justice for all. And if you care anything about the United States, and that's a personal call, you look at that history, the abolition of slavery in the Civil War, the saving of the United States from destruction by the Southern secessionists, women getting the right to vote in the 20s, labor getting the right to organize in the 30s, the establishment by government of mandatory education, free education for children, banning of child labor, the establishment of Social Security, 40-hour work week during the New Deal, all these things, then the Civil Rights Movement. That's the history of America that I think inspires Americans when we look back on it. And right now, we're stuck because I think we're in a, we've been I'd have to say, propagandized for 60 years as consumers, a credit card economy, consumption, rather than citizenship. And I just think we've lost our way.
Well,
and we've got to find ways to get back to a citizenship-based society, economy that works for everyday people, not just the guys at the top. If you look at the statistics, I mean, they're really quite startling. For 30 years in this country, we've had trickle-down economics that began with Ronald Reagan. You know, the idea that government, he said in his inaugural address, is not the solution. Government is the problem. Get government out of the way, and we'll all live better. Well, here we are 30 years later. The average wage earner earns less in real money than they did 30 years ago. Worker productivity at the same time has gone up 88%. The gross domestic product has nearly tripled from $5 trillion to $14 trillion. Average workers working longer hours, 100 hours a year for a man, 200 hours a year for a woman. Not making any progress, losing ground. Our educational system is going into the tank. At the same time, if you made $1 million in 1980, you make $3 million now. And just last year, fittingly on April Fool's Day, the front page of the New York Times business section says, hedge fund pay roars back. Top 25 managers averaged $1 billion in pay for the previous year. Now, if you make $50,000 a year, it would take you 20,000 years to make $1 billion. Something's screwed up, right?
Well, I think I've got the time, you know. But
yeah.
But you know, as we speak, the latest reports are that a shutdown of our government is near. As of 1:17 p.m., the New York Times is reporting attempts to frame the issue in the final hours before the shutdown deadline have basically failed, and the right wing is actually bringing down the American government. So
it's a logical extension of an argument they've been making for 30 years, and that is that the government is in the way of progress. It's turning the founders' view on its head, that the government was essential to protect the public's welfare, to promote the welfare and ensure justice, as well as commerce. Okay? I mean, the history is clear. They wanted to promote commerce and they wanted justice. And the right has attacked the legitimacy of government for 30 years. It has undermined people's confidence in government. It is a logical extension, in my view, of their philosophy that they shut down government. They only think government's good when government gives their interests special breaks.
Now, one of the things in your book, which I never got a copy of, by the way, but nevertheless did get some PDF information, which I haven't fully read, but one of your chapters, one of your early chapters, is about restoring responsible media in America.
Yes.
You treat that as a priority, a challenge.
It's a fundamental element.
Talk to me about that, about
okay,
TV
American
news.
American media is part of the consumer economy. The consumer economy, we've shifted from a manufacturing economy to a consumer economy. Parenthesis, Jeff Immelt, head of GE, the America's largest corporation, has called that policy insane, but you have to ask, who did it? Business and government both did it, as David Brooks, who's sort of a libertarian columnist for the New York Times, has written. Now, media exists, with rare exception, in the commercial context. They're owned by commercial corporations, not bad people whose job is to maximize return for shareholders, so that you have a 70% GDP consumer economy. You have media driving that consumerism. All the advertising on television is to create a consumer mindset. Now, what's a consumer mindset? It's what I own is important. What I own is what I am identifying myself with. If I've got a credit card, I don't need anybody else. So it does two things that distort the founder's basic idea. It has nothing to do with citizenship, nothing to do with community, and it gets you to identify yourself by what you own rather than in part by what you contribute to your community.
Amen, because, you know, I've done a film called In Debt We Trust, which is about these credit cards and the consumption economy,
yeah.
And my new film, Plunder, The Crime of Our Time, is about the financial crisis as a crime story, showing how this greed machine has basically wrecked the American economy for millions and millions of people.
Absolutely right.
And one of the issues you raise is you talk about socialism is considered a bogeyman on American television.
Well, let's take it one at a time. In terms of why I focus on the media, we have to reform the media at least in part, so that it serves a public purpose. We have to go back and remember the media uses public airwaves. It is by law regulated by the United States government. The 1934 Federal Communications Act, which gave private enterprise the privilege of using the airwaves to make money, said they would do it. They had to further the public interest. The public interest phrase is used more than 100 times in the legislation. So there were all sorts of rules that required quality news, equal access, fairness doctrine, public service announcements. They've all been gutted in the last 30 years. We need to reclaim a responsible media. My proposal is that we do what we do on in the West. There's a lot of public lands. You want to mine minerals from the public lands, you pay a royalty on what you take off the public lands. We ought to charge a royalty to these broadcast companies that make billions of dollars. I've proposed a simple 5% royalty fee on their $160 billion advertising budget. That would generate $8 billion a year. We should set up something, take that. That, by the way, that's 17 times the budget of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting if it survives this budget farce with any budget at all. Take that money, distribute it to local and state governments and nonprofits, and use it to run world-class public service ads about the values of citizenship, the values of quality family time, the values of getting out and getting some exercise, the values of being part of an active part of your community. We ought to do world-class educational programming for kids about the importance of being in school and doing well, teenagers, seniors. And we've lost 35,000 reporters in 5 years in this country with the downsize of print media, and informed citizenry being foundational to the founders' concept of democracy. Let's hire some reporters, have them work for nonprofits, give the news to local media so people can stay informed.
Brian Kahn, by the way, author of Real Common Sense, is making a lot of sense here on our program today. And Sherry, any thoughts on this?
I mean, I think he's fantastic and should be on the nightly news with what he's saying. Let's raise a ruckus. When we change the media, then we'll change the world. I can't wait to read your book. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's just something. The situation is serious. And you raised the socialist thing. My father was a socialist. My grandfather was a Rock Rib Republican. They didn't get along too well. But my dad would laugh at the idea that this socialist bogeyman that's used. Socialism died, Marxian socialism, 20 years ago with the collapse of the Soviet Union and the conversion of China to the second largest capitalist economy in the world under a communist government dictatorship. Okay, so the idea of socialism is just a decoy to get people to not ask the real question. And the real question is, we have a global, multi-corporate, multinational economy. That's the reality. The right thinks it's great. Fine. Let's talk about it and say, okay, it's very productive. It produces vast amounts of wealth, uses technology very innovatively, establishes good prices if there's competition, and it also serves the people at the top of the pyramid extraordinarily well. Okay? But how does it do for the average person? How does it do for the tens of millions of Americans who make the system work, the billions of people in the world who make the system work? Can it provide fundamental nutrition, decent housing, medical care, education for children, dignified retirement for older people? Can it do that? Now, let's just have that discussion, because if it's such a great system and it may well be able to do those things, let's make the modifications to make it happen. Right now, that isn't happening. Wealth is concentrated more and more and more in the higher sectors of society. 1% of Americans right now owns more wealth than the bottom 90% private wealth in the United States.
Well, you know, Brian, you're basically raising issues that others have raised, but you're putting it in a way that I think is very inspiring and incisive, and I want to congratulate you on that. I want to call your book to the attention of our readers, and I'll also write about it on my blog, Real Common Sense, from Seven Stories Press.
We'll make sure they get you a book, for crying out loud.
Right. They're the publishers of my book that I'd like you to look at 10 years back, called The More You Watch, The Less You Know, that treats these media issues through the lens of someone who's worked in mainstream media, who has some war stories to tell. And stories that I'm still telling in my latest book, The Crime of Our Time, basically about the failure of financial journalists to really alert us to the financial crisis in America. So I'm trying to do all that. I really appreciate your coming on today. Real Common Sense is a book I'm looking forward to actually holding in my hands one day. And I want to tell our listeners that for Sherry Welch and myself, we want to thank you again for listening to this program. We will have the podcast up on our blog as soon as we receive it from Joe the Archivist. And once we get it, we will post it, and we will send you a copy, Brian, of the podcast, and we'll send it also to our first guest, Lauren Lister from Russia Today Television. We'd like to ask our listeners to share it with their friends to try to build the audience for this network and for this program. My blog is at newsdissector.com/blog. More information on my film From Plunder, thecrimeofourtime.com. You can write to me at dissector@mediachannel.org. I'd like your comments, your thoughts, your suggestions for future shows. Big props and thank you to Kat Waters, who's in the studio with me today, and to the Green Arrow, who has been working with us in trying to promote Plunder and the like. So thanks for joining us. Be with us again next week. We're going out with my anthem from the movie In Debt We Trust.
To chase and to